Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Today we are continuing my discussion with the Colorado Springs doctor, OBGYN, Roy Stringfellow, who has personally counseled Dr. Dobson about the partial birth abortion ruling. He's written a letter that Focus on the Family has been distributing to some people. And this letter presents further misinformation. I'll quote to you from page 2 of Dr. Stringfellow's letter. He says this, and this is false. He says, the elimination of partial birth abortion effectively removed the only realistic procedure for aborting babies in the late second trimester and the third trimester. That is not true. That is false information. It is emboldening Focus on the Family to further dig in to praise this brutally wicked partial birth abortion ruling. So let's continue with the interview, and you will hear from Dr. Stringfellow himself that he knows this is not true. He knows that partial birth abortion is not the only realistic procedure for aborting late-term babies. He is misinforming Dr. James Dobson and Tom Minery at Focus on the Family, and they are furthering this falsehood. Let's listen in now. And I'm wondering if you could take the testimony of Warren Hearn, who does these, and take our testimony that you could schedule today. You could hang up the phone from us, Dr. Stringfellow, and you could have one of your nurses call and schedule a late-term abortion at any facility around the country that does late-term abortions. And you will find out that they will schedule that for that baby to be killed. So doesn't that mean that your conclusion that these cannot happen now is wrong?
No, I never said they could never happen. I said there were other techniques by which this could be done.
Okay,
Listen to me. I'll listen to you talk now. Listen to me talk for
Please
a little
do.
Bit, okay? These other methods you're talking about are technically difficult. It's not something every abortionist can do. It's dangerous. They carry a huge potential complication, and you've got to convince the patient you need to kill their baby first and then do it. You can schedule these other abortions, but I can tell you the most reasonable tool for doing these things has been removed from the abortionist quiver.
Now,
so they just don't have that option anymore. Certainly they can do abortions
In the
late trimester, but it's much harder, and it's going to dramatically lower the thing. What you're telling me now, okay, I can't refute you. I'm going to make some phone calls myself and find out. But I suspect these people like Tiller and it wouldn't be Warren Hearns because he never did a partial birth abortion in his life.
Not only has he never done a partial birth abortion, no partial birth abortion has ever been published in a peer-reviewed journal by abortionists.
That's exactly right.
He has a hard time identifying late-term abortionists who will do partial birth abortions. The Supreme Court itself, in their ruling, they said, and I have the ruling right in front of me, they go through the different procedures for how abortions are performed. And then they get into the late-term abortions. And they say there are no statistics available for how many partial birth abortions are done. They talk about hysterotomies, they talk about D&E, but then they point out that if an abortionist truly wants to do an intact D&E, basically a partial birth abortion, they recommend that he can give an injection that kills the fetus. That's on page 35 of their ruling, and that he would therefore be able to deliver the baby intact and not violate this law. I have in front of me quotes. The Supreme Court justices went through a number of different ways of killing late-term babies. And you and I could start reading through these excerpts from the ruling. I mean, it's gruesome because they actually describe these ways of killing these babies.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on this because I think this is really the genesis of how you people don't really understand this as well as you should. And you need to read the ruling a little more carefully. Okay, it's and I'm quoting directly from the ruling. If a partial birth abortion is truly necessary in certain circumstances, and if you read the whole thing, it means...
You're quoting from Section 4, Part B.
That's right. In other words, to save the life of the mother, okay, if...
Well, that's
if,
not what they mean, but go ahead.
Listen to me. If there's a necessity to do that, and partial birth abortion is the only way to do that, in that case, then they can kill the fetus using digitalis or potassium chloride and proceed. Okay, that's a big...
They mentioned digoxin.
Okay. All right. Now, that is in there very clearly, so that if it's not for the life of the mother, they cannot do that.
Well, that, Dr. Stringfellow, once again, you are completely wrong. I have read this ruling line by line. You have just, I believe you made an accident, but you just misrepresented page 35 of the ruling, and we link to the ruling. We'll put this excerpt on the show with our summary today on our website. That is not true. First of all, if it was limited to save the life of the mother, it would still be killing the baby. But it's not true. They offer an injection that kills the fetus, not only on this page, but earlier throughout this ruling. That is one of the various ways they say you can kill that baby and not violate this ruling.
Okay, where on page 35 are you talking about?
Where I have the quote right in front of me. If the quote begins at the end of page 34. If the intact DNA procedure is truly necessary in some circumstances, and they're not talking about life of the mother. That has, they mean if the abortionist determines it's necessary, it appears likely an injection that kills the fetus is an alternative under the act that allows the doctor to perform the procedure.
Yeah, but if you read the rest of the thing,
I've read
pretty
the rest.
Clear that if necessary is talking about the life of the mother.
That's not true
there
at all, Dr. Stringfellow.
There's not a health exception, and that's one of the really good things about this ruling.
They deal with the life of the mother and health exceptions.
It is part of it.
Would you like us to take a couple minutes and pull up the ruling and talk through it?
Sure, that'd be fine.
Okay.
But let me tell you this.
Yeah.
If I were an abortionist, and if I read this the way I've read it, and if I read it the way the American College read it, I read their statements on this, American College of OBGYN, it would convince me that if I did that injection simply to kill the baby so that I could do the abortion, if there wasn't a serious problem where the life of the mother was involved, that I would then be liable for penalties. And that's what makes
okay.
this a good...
Okay, Dr. Stringfellow...
Hear me out, and I'll listen to you again. And the reason that's so important is the penalties are really severe, huge fines. But more than that, if you're found guilty, you can go to jail for 2 years, and it's a felony, and you can lose your medical license. So I tell you, abortionists are going to be really careful about how they utilize this scenario. This is going to scare a lot of them away from doing partial birth abortions. And this is not going to be an excuse so they can just kill the baby and do them just like
okay,
always.
Now I could demonstrate to anyone who has even done a cursory read of this opinion that you're wrong. Throughout the opinion, they reiterate that this only bans the abortion of a fetus while it is alive as it is being delivered from the mother.
That's correct. And,
they
kill it if it's for very unusual circumstances.
And so they state that if the baby is dead, they state it clearly and repeatedly through the ruling, if the baby is dead before it is removed from the mother, then there is no violation of this ruling. And that is specifically stated right here on page 34. This is in section 4 of the ruling.
Yeah, I'm fully aware of that.
Subsection B.
Let
me read it to you. The conclusion that the act does not impose an undue burden on the right to abortion is supported by other considerations. So they're saying that this regulation does not impose an undue burden on the right to have an abortion. Alternatives are available to the prohibited procedure.
That's right.
As we have noted, the act does not prescribe DNA. One, Okay, and then they talk about that for a bit.
There.
Then they say, in addition, the Axe prohibition only applies to the delivery of a living fetus.
That covers a circumstance where a baby has died in utero, whether it be from natural causes or what, and then a partial birth abortion could be performed.
Then they say, if the intact DNA procedure is truly necessary in some circumstances, and by that, in this context, they mean if the abortionist determines he really needs to do an intact DNA, they talk about the difficulty of ripping the baby in parts, and they say some abortionists prefer to take the baby out in one piece. It takes less time. It's less difficult. So they say, if the intact DNA procedure is truly necessary in some circumstances, it appears likely an injection that kills the fetus is an alternative under the act that allows the doctor to perform the procedure. And so, Dr. Stringfellow, you have just misrepresented the case.
I think you have. It says, if truly necessary, and because there's no health exception, the only thing that would make it truly necessary would be a threat to the life of the mother.
That's not true. They deal with that issue.
You need to reread your...
Yeah. All right, Dr. Stringfellow, you are misrepresenting this ruling in an egregious way.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how the attorneys come down on this. But I tell you what, the average abortionist is going to look at this, going to read it exactly the way that I've read it, and they're not going to want to be looking at a potential 2-year jail sentence, having a felony on their record, and losing their medical license. And they're going to back off from doing this.
Why do you think you could still pick up the phone today and schedule a late-term abortion?
You can schedule a late-term abortion, but good luck trying to schedule a partial birth abortion.
No, that's not the issue. The disagreement is that you can still kill the same baby of the same age. You have led Dr. Dobson to believe that the abortionist now cannot kill that baby, and there is overwhelming evidence at the steps of the late-term abortion clinics all over the country that that is not true. You could ask Dr. Dobson's staff to just schedule their own late-term abortion.
Well, we could certainly do that.
Could we do that?
I'm just telling you from a medical standpoint, these other ways of doing it are done by a very, very small number of people. Abortionists across the country that have been able to utilize the partial birth abortion ban are not going to want to take the risk involved with doing these different kinds of late-term abortions.
The number of late-term abortions,
I'm talking about late second trimester, third trimester abortions went up dramatically after partial birth abortion came into play.
Say that again?
The number of late second trimester and third trimester abortions went up after the 1992 when Warren Haskell introduced partial birth abortion.
Okay, I'd like to ask you, do you recall? You might not recall, but what is your source for that information? Because National Right to Life has been saying through the 90s till today, abortion numbers have gone down significantly, and that's not just the first trimester abortions. So we would say that that's not true, that it's not true. I mean, saline abortions were done early on in the abortion industry, and abortionist Warren Hearn wrote his book, his textbook, Abortion Practice.
I read his book.
Yeah, and he was not promoting partial birth abortion, and the abortion industry was not. That was back in 1984.
Yeah, this ruling was not aimed at Warren Hearn and people like him. He's an outlier. He's a fanatic. I've heard him talk.
You said this earlier.
Medically exquisitely dangerous what he does.
Dr. Stringfellow, you said this earlier. You said Warren Hearn, he's like a really bad late-term abortionist, but then there are the others. All late-term abortionists are gruesome in their murder, and they will be happy to apply any technique they need to kill these babies. Late-term abortionists, that's what they do, and they get paid tens of thousands of dollars. It's like being a hitman to kill one little boy or girl. So could we do this, then? Could we leave it for 2 weeks, and your office or Focus on the Family attempt to schedule late-term abortionists, like we do, at any late-term abortion clinic around the country, and let's report back on whether or not they can do these abortions? Because if they do, if they accept the appointment, Dr. Stringfellow, would you agree that that's de facto evidence that you were overly optimistic and you gave Dr. Dobson wrong counsel?
Well, I gave him good medical counsel.
The conclusion was that this will save...
We'll be happy to make some calls for you, and we'll be happy to see what we come up with.
Dr. Stringfell, your conclusion was that this ban will save hundreds of thousands of babies in the coming years. And so if late-term abortionists will schedule these appointments readily, then I hope you would admit that your counsel to Dr. Dobson was wrong. It's not going to save hundreds of thousands of babies.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it falls out.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Well, we'll check into it, too. I mean, you know, I suspect that you're making the calls, but I'll feel more comfortable when we can do the calls ourselves.
Please do, and then we'll get back, and we'll attempt to do a follow-up.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Stringfell.
Okay, thank you. And, you know, I appreciate your heart, and I appreciate where you're coming from. But it just really saddens me to see this kind of infighting going on within the pro-life community. And I can guarantee you the pro-choice people are really just loving it. We need to be working together, not at each other's throat, and that really disturbs me.
Dr. Stringfellow, since you brought that up, why don't we address that for just a moment?
Sure.
We have, you know, National Right to Life for 20 years has been excommunicating, kicking out pro-life leaders and entire state groups when they've made a biblical argument that it's immoral to regulate child killing. And so those groups have been kicked out. In fact, that happened to Colorado Right to Life just a few months ago. And Focus on the Family made a public statement applauding and actually using pretty harsh terminology to condemn Colorado Right to Life, being a rogue and divisive organization and so on. Our open letter to Dr. Dobson starts out saying, Dr. Dobson, it is with love and sadness that we write to you because you have brought many people to trust in Jesus Christ. And so then we go through and we lay out the case and we document that the justices that we are told are pro-life, like Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, that these justices, John Roberts, that they have rejected the argument of the God-given right to life of the unborn. They reject that argument and they believe that it is proper to regulate the killing of children. So I don't know if you
Have they told you that?
Say that again?
Have they told you that?
Well, we quote from their own writings, from their rulings. Antonin Scalia said this. He said, and this is a recent quote, he said, I will strike down Roe v. Wade, but I will also strike down a law that is the opposite of Roe v. Wade. A group thinks that all states should have to prohibit abortion. They are wrong. And why has he concluded that? I submit that 30 years ago, he could have been a pro-life justice. But for over a quarter of a century, our pro-life strategy has been urging him to uphold laws that regulate the killing of children, that say if you sign this paper for consent, you can kill the baby. If you wait 24 hours, you can kill the baby. If you don't pull the baby out past his belly button, you could kill the baby. And as a human being, the only way he could go along with that is if he believes that baby does not have a God-given right to life. So that is the crisis in the pro-life movement that Alan Keyes is desperately trying to get Christian pro-lifers to acknowledge. If that's true, Dr. Stringfellow, if it's true, if our documentation holds up, that we have a generation of conservative Republican justices who do not believe in the personhood or God-given right to life of the unborn, would you agree there is a crisis in the pro-life movement?
Oh, there's been a crisis ever since Roe versus Wade.
Yeah, but I'm talking about our own judges that we call conservative pro-life.
The crisis would be people that see the world as black or white cannot allow these justices to work within the system the way they see fit.
Well, I'm asking
to make improvements. Now, I know what you're saying. I know what your argument is.
Could you address it then?
And I feel very firmly myself that any regulation of life is inappropriate. I think the laws as written and enacted through our Congress and approved by our judges are wrong, but the laws are there. And
when Clarence Thomas
attacking the pro-life justices and by attacking solidly pro-life organizations such as Folks in the Family, that's not going to help anything. It's going to damage
Clarence,
we really need to work together and not work at each other's throats like that.
Dr. Stringfellow, when Clarence Thomas wrote in Casey, Supreme Court decision, he's a justice. This is 15 years ago. When he writes that the states have the right to keep abortion legal, if they weigh the issue and the states decide to keep abortion legal, they have that right. That is not a pro-life position.
No, it's not, but that's the way the Constitution is written.
That's not true. The Constitution, that's not true. The Constitution does not say that you can destroy life or limb of someone who's not convicted of a capital crime. That's not true. The Constitution doesn't allow the states to legalize killing Jews or raping women. These are fundamental human rights. So our pro-life leaders have rejected the right to life. And instead, they've replaced it with national right to life strategy that it is appropriate to regulate the killing of the unborn. And that is the crisis that Focus on the Family has not yet acknowledged. That is a crisis, and we created that crisis with our own pro-life judges.
Well, what are your suggestions for replacing them? Who would you, how would you replace them?
It's not the issue of replacing them. It's the issue of teaching our justices that it is wrong to regulate the killing of the innocent. And if we Christian leaders start to teach, once again, we stopped 25 years ago. If we start to teach personhood and the God-given right to life of the unborn, then some of our judges will believe in that, some of them. But today we've destroyed a generation of our judges who believe that the government has the right to regulate the killing of unborn children.
Okay.
That's the crisis.
Well, I see your points and I understand where you're coming from. And I think we're a lot closer than you may realize. But it's been an extremely unpleasant and confrontational scenario for me, and I'm sad to see that. You know, I just think it's a bad situation.
Hey, so, Dr. Stringfellow, could you, maybe it's too self-serving for me, but could you answer this? It seems to me a yes or no question. If, in fact, a generation of conservative justices now reject personhood, that is a crisis that has been ignored by our pro-life leaders. Is that true? If there is a generation of conservative justices who now reject personhood, that is a crisis that has been ignored by our pro-life leadership.
Well, the rejection of personhood is a sad scenario, and it certainly is a crisis. And
among our judges, I'm not talking about the pro-aborts. I'm talking about our conservative pro-life judges. If they, in fact, reject the God-given right to life, is that a crisis that has been ignored by pro-life leadership?
Well, I don't know if it's been ignored by pro-life leadership, but it's just a scenario where these justices follow the law.
Well, they follow national
right
to life and
focus
on the family.
They follow the moral background. And this started a long time ago. This started back before Roe versus Wade. And it's sad. I think our pro-life leaders have addressed the fact that this is wrong and this is inappropriate. It's still a crisis, but I think you're being unfair when you accuse people of ignoring this.
Dr. Stringfellow, Focus on the Family has never, you could search their website, look at news reports, they have never brought attention to the crisis that our pro-life judges reject the God-given right to life. And they believe instead that the government has the authority to regulate the killing of innocent children. That is a crisis. That could mean it'll take another 50 years to replace all our pro-life justices with ones who believe in personhood.
It may take 10,000. It's going to be hard. Well, I feel that we're working against the people that can't help us, and that's the sad scenario.
Well, thank you. Thank you,
and we'll talk to you later.
We'll try to get back in 2 weeks. Thank you, Dr. Stringfellow.
Bye.
That was Dr. Roy Stringfellow with Advanced Gynecology down in Colorado Springs. He wrote one of the letters that Dr. Dobson had referred to, and he is an official with APLOG, the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, and his name appears on the letterhead of the second letter. And it is tragically clear to me that these letters are misinforming Focus on the Family and Dr. Dobson. They are being misled. Let me quote from Dr. Stringfellow's letter, page 2, top paragraph. He writes this, and this is simply not true, and we know it's not true from his own admissions during this interview. We know now that he knows and he believes this is not true, and this is what he told Dr. Dobson. The elimination of partial birth abortion effectively removed the only realistic procedure for aborting babies in the late second trimester and the third trimester. So he has admitted in this interview, oh, there are others, they're perhaps less popular, but the truth is that from all the evidence, partial birth abortion was the least popular of the late-term abortion procedures. It is not the preferred method of the abortion industry, and late-term abortions have not disappeared since April, but in fact they have continued unabated. So we will hope that Dr. Stringfellow will have his nurse make some calls, and hopefully they'll record those calls and try to schedule late-term abortions, and they will be shocked. Now, there is one issue to note with former Kansas Attorney General Phil Klein coming into Colorado to speak at Colorado Right to Life's annual banquet this Saturday, September 22nd. He had been going after George Tiller for a couple years, and finally George Tiller was arrested, a mugshot of Tiller, and including in the charges against Tiller are, for example, failure to report when a young girl was apparently raped, statutory rape. And so for that and other reasons, George Tiller now has legal problems, and Tiller has, of his own accord, changed his practice in the last few weeks. And so it is possible that Dr. Stringfellow will come back and say, oh, look, in Wichita, we couldn't schedule an appointment with George Tiller. But that has nothing to do with the partial birth abortion ban, because for the months after the partial birth abortion ban, Tiller continued to do his late-term abortions. So we will get you updated on this story as we get more information. We want to thank you for tuning in. Bob and Yurt Live airs in Denver on KLTT AM 670, Monday through Friday, 3 in the afternoons, and on the internet at kgov.com. So you can invite a friend to tune into this show or any of the shows we've done. May God bless you.